Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a cacistocrat to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're taking another look at this week is non sequitur.
Yeah.
Cacistocrat?
Cacistocrat. Yeah. So a cacistocracy is a government that is run by the worst, least suitable, most incompetent people.
Because it's a lot of caca.
Well, it's actually from Greek.
Oh,
I think
okay.
Kakos is bad in Greek and kakistos is worst. So
right.
That's where it comes from.
Kakistocracy. Wow. And it's, with nice overtones of caca.
Absolutely. So, non sequitur, we've discussed before, we're doing this a little bit these days, where we go back and look at some of the first ones we did.
Yeah.
Because it's been now 6+ years since we started this.
Yeah.
And some people might not have listened to the first few.
And also it gives us a chance to see whether we've cured the world of committing that particular fallacy.
Yeah, sadly.
Since we looked at it.
Yeah. Sadly, we haven't. But that does mean that there's lots of lovely new examples to choose from. So non sequitur is kind of the overarching logical fallacy, really. Because it just means something that does not follow. So colloquially, a non sequitur is when you're having a conversation and someone says something that doesn't follow on from the thing that was just said. That's a non sequitur.
Right.
In logical fallacy terms, it is where the conclusion doesn't follow from the premises.
Right.
So they set up the argument and then what they conclude in the end is not something you could conclude based on that premise or those premises.
Right.
It doesn't logically follow.
Yeah.
So our first example comes from a Trump tweet from November 12th of 2020, just after the election that he lost, because I thought, why not harken back to happier times? So he said, nobody wants to report that Pennsylvania and Michigan didn't allow our poll watchers and or vote observers to watch or observe. This is responsible for hundreds of thousands of votes that should not be allowed to count. Therefore, I easily win both states. Report the news. So,
therefore, obviously won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if, as we so often say, it's not true, but if it was true, it doesn't actually get to where he wants to get to. So, if it was true that people weren't allowed to observe the vote counting in Pennsylvania and Michigan, that meant you could throw out the votes for those states.
right.
That doesn't mean he won.
Yeah.
Because even if you could, if this is not legitimate, it's not how this works.
Yeah.
And observers were allowed to observe the counting in those states. But even if they weren't, and that meant you could throw out thousands of votes, who knows who those votes were for?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because the observers weren't allowed to observe, it meant that they could get all of the Biden votes out of the corners
unobserved
and shove them through. Because, that's not how it works.
Yeah. So he said some things, then said therefore, followed by a thing which is not something that follows
not related
from the premises.
All. Yeah. So it's a bit like Dinesh D'Souza's documentary Shaped Things. This is a causal connection shaped statement.
Kind of.
Because
he
shoved therefore in there.
Yeah.
And just gone for a completely outrageous thing. Therefore, I easily win both states. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, fair enough. And everybody's going to go, oh, no, why didn't we think of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And therefore, the moon is mine.
He made a similar claim
right.
a couple of years later. Actually, it was a year and a bit later because it's January 2022 when a court decision went his way.
The 2020 election was rigged. And everyone knows it. You know who knows it more than anyone else? The Democrats. Just yesterday, we had a giant victory in the great state of Pennsylvania. A statewide court ruled that the practice of no-excuse mail-in ballots put in place by Democrats right before the stolen election is illegal and flagrantly unconstitutional. And therefore, I assume we won the state. I assume.
So
there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Therefore, I won. Yeah.
So again, if this was true,
it still wouldn't prove his point.
The yeah. point he's trying yeah. to say it proves isn't yeah. accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if it was true that expanding mail-in voting to not require excuses anymore mm-hmm. was illegal, even if that meant you could throw out all of the no-excuse mail-in votes, that doesn't necessarily mean he won Pennsylvania, for example.
Yeah.
As it is, the stuff he's saying isn't true. There was a court victory that month in their favour,
right.
which didn't call mail-in voting flagrantly unconstitutional and illegal.
Mm-hmm.
It did address a change to the rules that hadn't been made by Democrats just before the election, but had been made in October right. 2019, so over yeah. a year before the election, by the Republican legislature yeah. in Philadelphia. It was yeah. voted on 105 yeah. Republicans to 2
Whoa.
Versus 33 Democrats to 59 who voted against it. So it was very much a Republican voted on thing. And it was yes. done over a year before the election. What it did, basically, was previously in Pennsylvania, you had to have an excuse to vote by mail. You had to have right. a reason that you couldn't get to the polls, or you had
yeah.
Disabilities or whatever that meant that it was not possible for you to vote in person.
Yeah.
And they expanded that in October 2019, before anyone knew anything about the pandemic,
right.
to mean that you didn't then need an excuse. But post-2020... when Trump blamed that for his loss,
right.
a lot of the Republicans who initially proposed that bill then challenged it legally. So in 2021,
yeah.
14 GOP congresspeople, 11 of whom had voted for the bill in 2019, challenged yeah. it in court and said it was unconstitutional.
Wow.
The court agreed that it was unconstitutional in as much as to change that rule. They said that you needed a ballot question and then a constitutional amendment. So basically, they said that the question needed to have been put to the electorate. They said,
right.
this is extremely popular and would almost certainly pass, but it yeah. needed to have been done differently.
Right.
Essentially.
Not done by the legislators, but should have gone to a vote.
Yeah. 6 months yeah. later, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, nah, it was fine. They did it perfectly all right.
Right. So using his logic, because 11 of the people that voted for the rule change then voted against it, their votes ought not to have counted.
Yeah,
why not? And he lost. Yeah.
So our final example from Trump is when he was discussing a thing that he thinks disqualifies Hillary from being able to be a fit president.
And we will be clear in naming our enemy radical Islamic terrorism. The fact that President Obama and Hillary Clinton can't even say these words prove how unfit she is to lead this country. She's unfit.
The inability to say the words radical say Islamic that. Terrorism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mean you're unfit to lead the country. He added President Obama in there, I think, as a mistake, because the transcript that was made available for that speech was the kind of the teleprompter version that didn't include right. any of his ad libs. And Obama wasn't mentioned at that point in the speech. So he started to talk about Obama, and then went, oh no, hang on, he is president. Who am I running against? Oh yeah, and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So yeah, I think whether you choose to phrase it in that way of calling it radical Islamic terrorism is not necessarily the thing that decides whether you are fit to be president.
Yeah.
There's a few other criteria.
Being found guilty of 34 counts of
That's
fraud.
That's a reasonable one, I think.
Might be more of a reason for being unfit for president, but no, apparently not either.
No.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, given that we've had three, is it, or maybe four Tory prime ministers since we tackled this fallacy last time, I thought I'd have a look at a couple of the last prime minister's questions of each of them to see how much they'd learned and how much they moved on from employing gratuitous fallacies to collaborating in progressive debate. Turns out they haven't.
No way.
So, no. So... So the first example was Boris's last Prime Minister's questions, where he was being asked about how the comments his fellow cabinet members were making, members who are now vying to become the next leader, how they reflected on his and his party's record in government. And he, of course, gave a humbled, reasoned, considered and apologetic response as a conclusion to Starmer's premises.
The message coming out of this leadership contest is pretty clear. The Foreign Secretary says we can't go on with our current economic policy. Yeah. And the member for Saffron Walden probably puts it best when she simply asked, why should the public trust us? We haven't exactly covered ourselves in glory. What message does it send when the candidate to be Prime Minister can't find a single decent thing to say about him, about each other, or their record in government?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, what does it say about him that no one can name a single policy of the late after 3 years opposition, apart from putting up taxes? He's one of those pointless plastic bollards you find around a deserted roadworks on a motorway, Mr. Speaker. We got Brexit done. He voted against it 48 times. We got this country passed out of COVID in spite of everything he would have kept, and when he would have kept us in lockdown.
So, apart from a bit of ad hominem, you know, what does it say about your government that your members of your government are saying this kind of stuff? He said, yeah, but what does it say about you? I think he misdraws a few conclusions there. One of them being, he's like, as a result of what he's saying, Keir Starmer over there reporting the words from members of my cabinet, members of my government, because of what he's saying, he's therefore like one of those plastic bollards that is around all traffic cones, as everybody else uses them. And also, in place of a conclusion as to what it says about the state of the Tories, all he does is just run out the old hits of, yeah, we got Brexit done, and got the country the far side of COVID in spite of everything. Were his exact words, you know, everything.
Everything we did.
Exactly, yeah. The very things that didn't cover them in glory, as mentioned by Kemi Badenoch, who's the new leader, two prime ministers later, who is the member of Saffron Walden. You know, all of the Partygate and the dodgy PPE deals, blah, blah, blah. My argument is that you can draw the wrong conclusion from somebody else setting up the premises, and that because they're...
Absolutely can, yeah, yeah.
And they're fairly consistent. How many have we had? Four? I can't keep going.
They all blur into one shitty Tory mix.
Yes, and they all kind of, you know, perhaps they're not quite as graphic in the imagery that they use, but they basically say, oh yeah, Starmer hasn't done anything. The only conclusion that we can draw of all these legitimate accusations being laid at our feet is that he's like a plastic bollard or he's got no idea.
Yeah, I mean, that the bollard thing, as is often the case with this, is both a logical and a colloquial non sequitur, because where the fuck did that come from? How does that have anything to do with what anyone was talking about?
Yeah, and how, and also it goes no way to explain... Where, how it's does that explain to do, yeah, what he immediately said before.
Yeah, at the most generous interpretation of it, he's calling him a traffic cone that is around roadworks that aren't happening anymore, like that have long been finished, and the traffic cones are still there.
Right.
But that, what is that as an analogy?
In the way?
Is it?
Yeah.
It's just like, if I'm really, really, really making an effort to make what he said makes sense.
Yeah.
It could be that he's alerting people to something that is no longer a problem.
Nice.
Maybe.
Yes.
But that's not anything to do with what he said Keir was doing.
No. No.
So it's still nothing, you know. No. And I'm really having to put a lot of effort in to get there.
Exactly. Yeah. The last time we looked at it, I think the example I used was Boris, who used the kind of colloquial non-sequitur and was called out for doing so, because it was about, 6 years ago, was there a Tour de France or something that Bradley Wiggins
probably
was
bloody
winning?
Cyclists are always at it, aren't they?
They're always at it, yeah. And I think Boris was being, you know, asked difficult questions, not unlike Starmer asking him difficult questions, and he just went, ah, yes, but why are we bothering with that? Bradley Wiggins is about to win the Tour de France. And he got called out.
That might have been a red herring, which is a similar kind of thing. But
yes, but a completely
out of left field.
Yes, it was a look over there. Look at this shiny thing.
The jingly keys fantasy. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So let's skip forward half a prime minister, a fraction of a prime minister. Anyway, Liz Truss, at her last prime minister question, responding when asked why is she still there.
The only mandate she's ever had is from members opposite. Yeah. Yeah. It was a mandate built on fantasy economics and it ended in disaster. Yeah. The country's got nothing to show for it except the destruction of the economy and the implosion of the Tory party. Yeah. I've got the list here. 45p tax cut, gone. Yeah. Corporation tax cut, gone. 20p tax cut, gone. 2-year energy freeze, gone. Tax-free shopping, gone. Economic credibility, gone. And her supposed best friend, the former Chancellor, he's gone as well. They're all gone. So why is she still here?
Mr. Speaker, I am a fighter and not a quitter. Interest to make sure that we have economic stability.
Her conclusions drawn from the evidence laid out by Starmer are, in reverse order, I have acted in the national interest to make sure we have economic stability, when that was her downfall. Her actual actions led to a massive economic instability to the tune of, I don't know, £22 billion.
Yeah, while she was saying this, we were like in the midst of a massive downturn caused by her mini budget. Could not have been a worse time to be claiming that she's created economic stability.
Yeah. And also she said, I'm a fighter, not a quitter. And she resigned the following day.
Yeah.
But what was interesting also is looking at Sunak's last PMQs, both as prime minister before the election and when he resigned from being the leader, after he became the leader of the opposition, so the last one of those, he actually just kind of, it feels like really, really, really old-fashioned politics. He just kind of agreed and supported and was not adversarial.
And he apologised, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He basically took responsibility for stuff. It was weird.
Exactly. And Starmer's, you know, he even made a joke about, you know, that it's, you know, I'm not... I think it was something to do with football or something. He said, far be it from me to give advice on winning, but let's wish the football team success, blah, blah, blah. There was not a non-sequitur in sight because he said, will the Prime Minister support this stuff? He said, well, I'm glad you asked that question. Yes, I will do that. And we will make sure that, you know, we will continue to support Ukraine's application to join NATO. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And it felt like it was from like the 40s.
It was very weird, wasn't it?
Raisins come from grapes, people come from apes. I come from fallacies. They come in first place in a non-existent race to hijack the argument. The argument's in pieces, or is it Capricorn? I can't keep my star sign straight. When I make mistakes, I mount logic assaults, cause assaults make mistakes taste great.
I don't want to be a bother, but your fallacies are wild.
Bare naked ladies there with their non sequitur filled raisins.
So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from Chocolat.
Aha.
And this is a little bit of narration that is not really to do with the main thrust of the story, but contains a lovely non sequitur.
The Comte de Ramenaud was a student of history and therefore a patient man.
I don't think that is something that you can assume just because someone enjoys studying history.
Yeah.
That does not necessarily make you patient. It doesn't mean that you're patient.
No. Therefore? Yeah. Therefore was a patient man.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yes, might be that he's a student of the long game and understands the part that passing of time means that we repeat our mistakes.
It may be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't follow that someone...
That it makes you a patient
It's like, and this may be one that we used before in the original,
right.
Paul Gosar, who is a dentist and therefore an expert in body language.
By the way, I'm a dentist. Okay, so I read body language very, very well.
That's not a thing.
That's right.
So,
because it doesn't,
there's a claim he made, kind of, but it's not a real thing.
And they could have just said he was a student of history and a patient man.
Yes, absolutely. You know,
because no the two aren't necessarily linked.
Yeah.
If you were a student of the growth rate of giant redwoods,
yeah,
you might follow that therefore you're a patient man. Yeah.
If you were a real big fan of the pitch drop experiment and therefore a patient man.
Yeah.
Then fair enough.
Yes.
So our next example is from The Simpsons, and this is an episode where Springfield is going through a change in area code, and some of the residents are not happy about it, and there's a town meeting, and Homer goes along with dynamite strapped to himself because he's really unhappy about it.
I know that some of you are upset about the area code change, especially those of you covered with dynamite. First, let me reassure you, your fears are groundless and your complaints moronic. Oh,
that's good.
This film will explain everything to you in words that you can understand.
Hi, I'm Phony McRingring, mascot and president of the telephone company. And I'm here to explain why the convenience of one area code in
your town
has been replaced by the convenience of two area codes. You're probably thinking, sure, more area codes are great, and I don't mind paying the extra hidden fees. But how will I remember all those numbers? Whoa! Well, scientists have discovered that even monkeys can memorize 10 numbers. Are you stupider than a monkey?
How big of a monkey?
Of course you're not.
Well, I'm convinced. A professional-looking film like that has got to be right.
I agree. Two area codes is more convenient.
Wait a minute. We haven't heard from me yet. The nut with the dynamite. The phone company is bamboozling you. I accuse the phone company of making that film on purpose.
Well, of course we did.
So there's quite a few non sequiturs in that.
Yeah.
So if it's true that monkeys can memorize 10 digits in a row,
and you're not,
stupider than a monkey, depending on how big the monkey is, that doesn't necessarily follow that it's more convenient to have two different area codes in the same town.
Yeah.
Also, Lenny's argument that
it's a professional
the film is
phone.
So professional that it must be correct.
yeah.
That doesn't follow. And Homer accusing the phone company of making the film deliberately.
It on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. Does not follow that it is therefore an attempt to bamboozle people, although it is.
Yeah.
But you can't make that conclusion from the fact that they deliberately made the film.
Yeah, not accidentally, just happened. Yeah.
And so our final example in this section is from The Winslow Boy. And this is an example where one of the characters points out that something you might think often follows isn't necessarily a conclusion that you can draw.
I understand you wish to marry my daughter.
Yes, sir. That is to say, I proposed to her and she's done me the honour of accepting me.
I see. I trust when you corrected yourself that your second statement wasn't a denial of your first. I mean, you do really wish to marry her.
Yes, of course, sir.
Why, of course. There are plenty of people about who don't wish to marry her.
I mean, of course, because I proposed to her.
Well, that too doesn't necessarily follow. However, we don't need to quibble.
Yeah, so you can't necessarily assume that just because someone proposes that they actually want to marry the person. It's probably the case.
Yeah, yeah.
And given the balance of probabilities, that is reasonable conclusion that you might draw. But in this case, at least, and in this society or milieu that these characters move in, he says, you can't necessarily make that assumption. So, yeah.
And actually, that would make you want to not marry her if you're going to be...
That's her dad, yeah.
You know, just realise you're going to be my father-in-law.
He's bloody pedantic, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do like the fact that he points out, well, why, of course, there are plenty of people who don't want to marry her.
Yeah. I think, what an infuriating little man you are. Yes.
So, before we move on to fake news this week, I just want to mention the socials, because the socials have had a bit of a shake-up in as much as everyone has left Twitter because of the election and Musk being a cunt and all of that stuff. I adopted Twitter fairly early on, a very long time before Musk took over, and I have enjoyed it as a place to be, but it has got progressively shittier, but there wasn't really anywhere else to jump ship to. And what has happened since the election is an enormous amount of people have left Twitter and moved to Blue Sky. And that has now become a viable alternative. Literally a million people a day are joining Blue Sky. And
It
is a really good kind of Twitter clone, but with proper moderation. So it's actually quite a nice place to be for now. Hopefully it will stay that way. So consequently, what I'm saying is, like everyone else, we're on Blue Sky.
Get over there.
Search for Fallacious Trump on there. Or the best and easiest way to do it on any of the social networks that we are on. Technically, we're still on Twitter because at the moment it's convenient, but I'll probably delete that at some point. But any, like Blue Sky, Threads, Facebook, Discord as well, Instagram, YouTube, any of them, the quickest and easiest way to do it is to go to fallacioustrump.com/ and then put the name of the social network in it and it'll take you to our account. Because that's nice and easy. Discord is also a great place, and our community on there is fully set up now. So if you want to be part of a community that has some nice pet pictures in there, for example, and also that now there is a way to be alerted to when there's a fake news coming out so that you can compete against Mark and see if you can beat him. If you're in our Facebook community or a member of our Patreon, then you can see
that.
I put up the fake news at the beginning of when we record the episode on Discord in our fake news channel. You can now just click on a little icon and then that will alert you every single time I put up a fake news thing so that you know that there's one there and you can come and compete.
Nice.
Speaking of which,
so we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news. The game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Well, see, with this game and the way that it's played, and clearly the scoring system is rudimentary at best, I've discovered that the only conclusion that it's possible to reach is that elephants are no fans of chili-infused cheese. That much is clear.
Completely reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also, as much as I like cheese, I'm not that big a fan of the stuff, the cheese with things in, like, Wensleydale and apricot or that kind of stuff.
Cranberry
I can
or
do without it.
Yeah. There are moments where you bite into it and then some bits of it aren't cheese.
Yeah.
And there's no way of gauging how much of a mouthful of non-cheese you're going to get. So it's always a surprise and you can never really deal with it adequately. Whereas I feel, if it's just cheese, you know it's all going to be cheese and you can prepare yourself.
Absolutely. And I'm usually prepared for cheese. I feel there was a deli that I frequented as a child with my mum, which did a cheese that had walnuts in it. That was good.
Oh, okay.
I can't imagine what kind of cheese it would have been now.
It's a bit like fruit and nut. It's like having, you know, a handful of dried fruit with nuts mixed in. There's that bit where you suddenly get a crunch when you're not expecting it. You can't relax whilst you're eating it because any minute now you'll just get not the thing that you expected. It's a bit like eating bags of here. I don't know what they're called in America where they have them. We have Revels, which are basically chocolate coated, ostensibly similarly shaped things, but they might have honeycomb in them or raisins or worst of all, a small ball of coffee. And the thing about eating Revels is they look on the surface to be all the same. They're sort of shiny.
They're all
brown.
Chocolate covered.
You pop them in your mouth and you might get one. You might get orange cream or caramel. So you can't relax whilst you're eating them.
That's very stressful.
That's a highly stressful candy. And we're coming up to Christmas and we get those big tins of a variety of chocolates, and there are inevitably ones that nobody likes.
Yeah, but they're in their own individually coloured wrappers, so you know what you're getting with
them. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so you can kind of avoid it.
Because contrary to what Forrest Gump's mum says, you do usually know what you're getting in a box of chocolates, because there's a little
map
that tells you what all of the things are.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps they bought really cheap chocolates.
Maybe.
They didn't come with a map, and they all
maybe
the
they had Revels. Maybe that was what she was talking about.
Life is like a bag of Revels.
You never know what you're going to get.
You never know what you're going to get.
Makes so much sense. That's definitely.
Yes. Yeah. 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 We're going to have to remix that. I think Revels should adopt that as a thing. Yeah. Get Tom Hanks to redo it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Yeah.
The theme this week is, well, bacon, for one, but also groceries. But specifically the word grocery and Trump's fascination with it.
Okay.
Statement number one. People don't think of grocery. You know, it sounds like not such an important word when you talk about homes and everything else, right? But more people tell me about grocery bills where the price of bacon, the price of lettuce, the price of tomatoes, they tell me, and we're going to do a lot of things. You know, our farmers aren't being treated properly.
Okay.
Bit of a non sequitur at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that bit between price of tomatoes and we're going to do a lot of things, another non sequitur there.
Yeah.
Kind of, what, yeah,
statement
okay.
number two.
Mm-hmm.
It'll also bring your grocery bill way down. I have more complaints on grocery. The word grocery, you know, it's sort of a simple word, but it sort of means like everything you eat. The stomach is speaking. It always does. And I have more complaints about that. Bacon and things going up double, triple, quadruple.
The stomach is speaking. It always does. What on earth? Oh, his does. I don't doubt. Oh, my God.
And, statement
number
three.
The word grocery. He's explaining the word grocery. Right. Okay.
The number one thing people ask me is about bacon. People just can't afford it anymore because it's grocery, right? That's what people mean when they say grocery. But you can't afford to buy the things you need when you go to a store, and they're not doing anything about it. Grocery, it's a word. Who knows what it really means?
He's said it so many times, it makes no sense to him anymore. It's an interesting word, because it's said in, you talk about your grocery bill, but you buy groceries.
Yeah, it's rarely an individual noun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the more you look at it, the more Dr. Seuss it looks, actually. Okay, so I've got to make sense of that. Right. Okay, the number one thing people have asked me about is bacon. Okay. But they can't afford it because it's grocery. That's what people mean when they say grocery. Bacon. Okay, yeah. Yeah. People don't think of grocery. And our farms aren't... There's the non-sequitur is a bit suspicious. The other thing that I'm a bit suspicious about is the missing word, where it says the word grocery, you know, it's sort of simple word. I can hear him saying it, but I suspect that that's something that you've done deliberately. Like you've done it on, purpose. One of these you've done on purpose. But it sort of means like everything you eat, the stomach is speaking, always does. Quadruple, does he know the word quadruple? Gross, it's a word, who knows what it really means. Really? It's toss up for me between that one and farmers aren't being treated. I'm going to go with... okay, I think number three is the one you made up.
Okay, so of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
Okay, I'm going to regret it. I think that number two, the stomach is speaking.
Okay.
And it's sort of simple word.
Okay. And number two?
Yeah.
Is real.
It'll also bring your grocery bill way down. I have more complaints on grocery. The word grocery, you know, it's sort of simple word, but it sort of means like everything you eat. The stomach is speaking. It always does. And I have more complaints about that. Bacon and things going up double, triple, quadruple.
Oh, man, that's going to be, that would be such a good sample to put
the
in
the stomach is speaking. It always does.
The stomach is speaking. It always does. No way. But it sort of means like everything you eat. No, really? Well, it's like he's discovered, he's invented the word grocery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's...
He's only recently learned what it means.
So. Yeah. It's sort of simple word, but it means the stomach is speaking. Not only is the stomach speaking, it always does.
Yeah.
It always does. Yeah. So it's almost poetic, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
So you also think right. Number one is real?
Yeah.
And number one?
Yeah.
Is real.
People don't think of grocery. You know, it sounds like not such an important word when you talk about homes and everything else, right? But more people tell me about grocery bills, where the price of bacon, the price of lettuce, the price of tomatoes, they tell me. And we're going to do a lot of things. You know, our farmers aren't being treated properly.
So
what?
This was in a town hall in direct response to a member of the public who'd asked what the Trump administration would do to bring the price of groceries down.
Right.
And
so we're going to do a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things is the only part of the answer that follows on from the question.
Yeah. And the other stuff, bacon, lettuce and tomato, because he's heard of hungry. A BLT sandwich. Yeah. That's right. What? Yeah, he goes past that to get to the burgers.
Yeah.
But he's recognised those as three of the major three items in your... three a day that you need bacon, lettuce, tomato. No. We're going to, you know, how farmers, it's, oh man. It was a bit like the one where he was asked about what's he going to do about child care provision or something like that, wasn't it? When he just went off on one, made stuff up because he'd never actually ever thought about that.
Child care is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People so think of grocery.
That means that you're correct.
Hey!
That number three was the one that I made up.
Ha ha!
Yeah.
It was a close run thing. It was either that, you know, our farmers aren't being treated properly, non sequitur on the end.
Uh-huh.
I thought, okay. But yeah, grocery is a word. Who knows what it's really. It's just so feasible. Yeah.
Well,
nabbit.
Yeah. We have a few social contestants on Discord where you can be alerted when there's a new fake news.
Ha ha.
Andrew says, I think having two and three where he defines grocery as the tell and one of those is fake. Of those, I'm picking two simply because I don't think he'd say quadruple.
I'm with you. A doubt entered my mind, yes.
And also on Discord, Tenacious Monkey says that's where their thoughts went as well.
Right.
There's no way he'd get quadruple. So
on
Patreon, Anders says they all have bacon and so subconsciously they all seem right to me. But if I had to pick one... it would be number one. I can't make myself believe that Donald would save space for a word like lettuce in his vocabulary. It would be the thing you find between the bun and the meat on the Big Mac. You know, the salad. Nobody knows that, you know. People tell me that they know that. What do you know? It's incredible.
Perfect. Yeah. Oh, we should get Anders to write the next one. Yeah.
The Pizza Dude Chronicles says, grocery, let's say you can't afford all three, therefore only the first two are real.
Well,
Kaz Tui says, geez, he's so removed from normal life that the pustulous vomit that pours out of the sewage drain in the middle of his face could well have produced all three statements, misusing and misunderstanding the word grocery. What a dickhead. I'm going for number one is fake because it uses the word grocery correctly just the once.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Rene Z says, I think number one is fake news. I know he talked about bacon a lot, but did he also throw in the L and the T of a BLT? That there I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's either Jim channeling the American love for BLT sandwiches, where's the mayo, or Trump was trying to stay healthy by talking about lettuce and tomatoes, seems unlikely. I only know that I skipped lunch today and this is making me hungry, so out to the grill to cook some chicken. On Facebook, CJ says, it's got to be two, no way he'd get quadruple.
Right.
Karen says, I think number two is fake. Number one is insulting and distracted. Number three is his type of bizarre. Grocery equals bacon. What? Number two sounds more coherent, therefore not Trump.
Right, okay, yeah. Stomach is speaking. Is that coherent?
Yeah, right. That's the trouble, you see. None of them are coherent. It's just this, it's a trick. When you lay it against two even less coherent things, people are fooled into thinking one of them is coherent.
Yes.
Mike says, I think number two is fake. It sounds too dumb even for him. Fennec says, I think one is fake news because the tangent to talking about farmers actually has too much of a logical connection to the agricultural products mentioned in the previous sentence.
Oh, the lettuce and tomato.
Not enough of a non sequitur, as Fennec's argument. I doubt he ever thinks about lettuce and tomatoes, not even on a burger. And finally, Eve says, I'm guessing number three, he would have whined about bacon being forbidden by liberal left.
Nice. Yeah.
There we go.
Wow. So, well done.
So, if you want to play along, join us on socials.
Yep. And get foxed by Jim. Yeah.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called A Grab Bag of Freaks is Not a Logical Fallacy, because, I mean, frankly, that's who we're getting as cabinet members that Trump is nominating. And then they are going to have to go through a confirmation process, some sort of
facade, farcical pretend thing. Yeah,
there was an argument that because... Mm. Some of them were so crazy that they wouldn't get confirmed that Trump was going to try and use recess appointments to get them through without any Senate confirmation.
Right.
But Mitch McConnell said that that wasn't going to happen, and various other senators said that they didn't think that was a good idea. So, and certainly with the example of Matt Gaetz, it seems like the reason that he stepped down and withdrew from consideration as Attorney General is because it was clear that he wasn't going to get confirmed, because Trump was apparently calling various senators who had expressed concern about that pick and kind of begging them to vote for him, and they were like, not in a million years. So so that's why he chose to withdraw, because it was clear that he was never going to get confirmed, and with good reason, because he's a criminal.
And he that brilliantly time-honoured politician's phrase where he said, yes, I'm becoming a distraction.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I am the distraction from this. I'm becoming the story and distracting from the nominations. You are the story. That's the thing. Release the details of the findings of the inquiry.
So Matt Gaetz probably has had the most written about him, most high profile in terms of the kind of the picks, because of partly the fact that he resigned from Congress when he was selected by Trump, which he didn't need to do, because there's a whole process and he wasn't necessarily going to get the job, clearly. Yeah. But he resigned, coincidentally, a couple of days before the Ethics Committee was due to release the findings, or vote. They were going to vote on whether to release the findings of their investigation into whether he sex trafficked minors.
Yeah.
So having then resigned, theoretically at least, the ethics committee has no kind of power then over him, no jurisdiction.
Right. Yeah.
Not that that has stopped congressional committees releasing reports investigating people like Hunter Biden, who not only is not a congressperson, but has never held any government position whatsoever. So I don't think that it necessarily restricts them from releasing their report. And indeed, when they did get round to voting, they voted not to actually release the report as is, or the evidence that they're basing their report on, but they voted to complete the report and then take a vote at a later date as to whether they will release it. So it's not definitely buried at the moment.
Right.
Whether that will make any difference to anything moving forward is I don't know if that would have any effect on the likelihood that any law enforcement would take steps or action against him. I don't know if it would have any impact on that. But there's the latest on Gates is that he's not obviously now in consideration for Attorney General. He's not considering running again in the special election that will be needed to fill his Congress seat.
Right.
And someone suggested he could be governor of Florida when Ron DeSantis's term is up, and Gates replied to that with a kind of a gif of the Florida flag or something, indicating maybe he's kind of thinking that that would be a good thing. But
right.
I suspect he's pretty well hated in Florida, as he is almost everywhere else. So
everywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus he would be up the road from Trump's golf retreat.
Gates is out, which is a good thing, but he's been replaced in consideration by Pam Bondi, who...
Not a good thing.
I mean, better than Gates, but corrupt. The thing is, almost all of Trump's picks are either incredibly unqualified or dangerous. Sometimes both. And I think Pam Bondi is at least qualified in as much as she was Attorney General of Florida, but shouldn't be in consideration and shouldn't be, should have an extremely difficult confirmation resulting in her not being confirmed, if nothing else, than because of the various kind of issues that she's had specifically related to Trump. Namely, the fact that she dumped an investigation into Trump University fraud case days after he donated $25,000 to her re-election campaign. So it feels like that should mean she shouldn't be his attorney general.
But who are going to be the people that wave them through or approve
the
their Senate. Nominations.
Yeah,
and who's got control of the Senate?
The Republicans,
Yeah, and they're all people that are determined to show their loyalty to the, you know...
So there's not going to be much that will stop most of these people getting through. The thing against Gates was that actually most senators and congresspeople hate Matt Gates as well.
So that
was actually the thing that was going to stop him from being confirmed.
Not the
laws he's broken. There's a few people who are not crazy choices, just bad-ish choices, like Marco Rubio for Secretary of State. He's a politician. You know, he's actually reasonably...
Not a news anchor or a conspiracy theorist or a...
I mean, part of the issues with the Republican Party being... the ones that you would choose from for these roles is much in the same way as the Tory leader had to come from the Tory party, and there were no good choices. They were all Tories and therefore
barrel
awful
scrapings.
People.
Yeah.
And they were
the people left after Liz Truss.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
And you kind of, by birth, you think, okay, so those people are gone. Who have we got left?
Yeah. So there are no good
choices.
Didn't
get voted in when they got voted in. Yeah.
So there are no good choices for these roles. And so someone like Marco Rubio is you know, one of the more normal choices, at least.
Yeah.
But of course, he doesn't have to pick from sitting Congress people or senators. Because apart from anything else, when he does, that reduces the Republican lead in those houses.
Right.
And those will usually have to have kind of special elections to replace them, which opens up at least a possibility that a Democrat might take that seat, although in most places it doesn't, because Gates is unlikely to be replaced with a Democrat, for example. But sometimes he is choosing people outside of government, which is how you get people like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy running a completely new department that isn't really a government department. It's an outside consultants, really. So he's not appointing them to government roles. There's no confirmation needed for that kind of thing. He's calling a new department. And they will be advising on government efficiency. It takes two of them to do that. And they'll be suggesting that things get defunded. I'm sure that Elon Musk will focus only on efficiency and not on the fact that he is a defense contractor with multi-million dollar contracts with the government. I'm sure that none of the decisions will affect those.
Will be based on that. Nor will the fact that he just wants to throw his weight around, and nor will the fact that he has bankrupted two companies, or is on the verge of bankrupting two of them at least. Why would that get in the way of his nomination?
Yeah.
Or rather, it's not a nomination. Why would that stop Trump appointing him? Because Trump is, you know, no judge of people's business abilities. He's just down for, I want people who are pretending to be like me or pretend to like me.
Yeah.
That's all I want. I just want loyalty and money. That's it.
Yeah, apparently Marjorie Taylor Greene has been tapped to work with Musk and Ramaswamy to
make them appear more human?
To help. No, how would that work? Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. By comparison. Fair enough.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. I put them in the same room and you go, oh, okay. Yes, I'd quite like to talk to that one. Please.
I understand. AOC said that actually this is quite good because she doesn't do anything. She doesn't turn up most of the time. She doesn't do the reading. So this is basically like handing them an unplugged controller.
That's excellent. Brilliant. And also they named it acronymistically.
Yeah.
DOGE.
Department,
so it's
of,
the
government
Department
efficiency,
of Government Efficiency. Just in order to pander to fucking Elon Musk's puerile sense of humour.
Yeah. One of the worst? I don't know. There's such a lot to choose from. A really bad pick is Pete Hegseth. The weekend Fox and Friends host. Not even weekday Fox and Friends host. He's like not good enough to be the weekday host.
He's the guy that just, when everybody's tired, and they just go, oh yeah, just come in on the weekend when nobody's watching. Yeah,
so this guy
out at rallies
has been chosen to run the entire Defense Department. He's going to be Secretary of Defense, which is the, I think, probably the largest employer in the world.
Wow.
It's 3 million service members and personnel, a massive, almost $1 trillion annual budget, and he has never run a company above like 15 people in the past.
Yeah. I suspect he's never even run a bath.
Yeah. I mean, and that's before even getting into his views on, for example, women serving in the military, which is they shouldn't, and and DEI and like woke issues in the military and just bullshit. Just and obviously that's without even talking about the sexual misconduct allegations against him,
right?
Which seems be almost a prerequisite to be one Trump's cabinet members.
Yeah, yeah. You know, never mind radical Islamist terrorists. Mm. If you can say that, fine. But if there's allegations of sexual impropriety, you're on the list. You got any allegations of sexual impropriety? No, sorry, then you can't come in.
Like, for example, Matt Gaetz, and also RFK Jr.
Yeah, and Trump himself.
And Linda McMahon, the Vince McMahon's wife, the wrestling woman who's going to be Secretary of Education, the first Secretary of Education to have been a playable character in a Nintendo 64 World Wrestling Federation game.
That's what you want.
Meanwhile, RFK Jr., Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Yeah.
Because what you really want is a vaccine skeptic, an FDA conspiracy theorist, a fluoride denier, basically all of the things that have actually contributed to improvements in public health over the last 100 years in the US. He is quite skeptical of all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, they've got people that are, J.D. Vance is the perfect example. They've got people who are deeply loyal to Trump's, I hesitate to use the word values, but what he thinks are important, they all are loyal to blind to the fact that some of them have changed their story?
Yeah, I don't know that they're
JD Vance has changed his tune.
Loyal to Trump's values or priorities so much as just Trump. They're loyal to Trump.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, okay, that's the only requirement.
Yeah. Or they see that, a bit like Boris Johnson saw which way the cookie was crumbling and decided to go for leave rather than remain for the Brexit thing, because it was a way of seeing some power getting into power.
I mean, certainly I think that's true of RFK,
And J.D. Vance as well. You know, having said Trump is America's Hitler and then actually going out and advocating for him because it would give him a job.
Yeah.
Has Trump not kind of noticed that? I said, well, you're only saying that because you want a job. No, it doesn't, because as long as you applaud him and meet all of his narcissistic needs, then he will overlook what you're doing. He's got no idea that they're all actually just playing the game in order to get a highly paid job and get some power.
Yeah,
that's why I find it odd that Musk thinks there's room in Trump's organization for two people like him that are, you know, overblown, bankrupt narcissists. How long is that going to last?
Trump? Yeah, it's not. It's going to go terribly. All of this is going to go terribly. And that's partly the point. Because the thing is, I think the only way that any of this makes sense is a combination of Trump's inability to make good choices and the fact that actually what Republicans want is for government to fail.
Right.
They want, for the most part, except when they're regulating your ability to do private things, for the most part, they want smaller government. And to do that, they want to destroy the Department of Education and the Department of Energy and all of the departments that regulate things.
Yeah.
And so the best way to do that is put complete idiots in charge of them. People who are generally anti the ideas of those agencies and have no ability how to actually make them work. Because if you do that, then they fail. And then you can say, look, see, government's stupid and rubbish and it doesn't work and it fails.
Yeah.
And that's why you put people like Kristi Noem in charge of Homeland Security, because she is obviously going to fail at that. That's a terrible idea. She is a complete idiot. She's someone who thinks it is a really good idea to write a book about shooting a puppy in the face and that people will like you for it.
Yeah. So, how to make your home secure? Shoot a puppy in the face.
Yeah.
Therefore, you're in charge of Homeland Security.
Yep.
Yes.
People like, for example, John Ratcliffe being CIA director. He was, I think, during Trump's first term, he was up for DNI job, the Director of National Intelligence, but couldn't get confirmed for that because he's got various issues with security clearance. But now he's going to be the director of the CIA. The Director of National Intelligence is going to be Russian asset Tulsi Gabbard, Putin and Assad apologist. She will be the one in charge of avoiding foreign people spying on America.
Yeah.
So that's great. Exactly.
That's good, yeah, because she knows about Russia. She's got the inside track on Russia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus we encountered her alongside Russell Brand with her Cruella de Vil white stripe and her hair.
Then you've got Russell Vought as the director of the Office of Management and Budget. He is the co-author of Project 2025, which, of course, Trump had absolutely no knowledge of or anything to do with. Vought was the one who was saying at the time, even when Trump was actively saying, I don't know anything about this or any of the people who are in charge of it, he was the one going on television and saying, of course he does, but it's political. It's politically useful to say that at this point. And I have no problem with that. He should do that. He should deny knowing anything about it because that's the way to get elected. That was his open line on the news programs that booked him to go on.
And it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's more, but they're all terrible. And I mean, I suppose one more worth mentioning is Dr. Oz, who couldn't get elected in Pennsylvania against Fetterman, but is now going to be in charge of Medicare and Medicaid, obviously with a view to destroying those two.
Yeah.
And and also Sebastian Gorka.
Yes! Friend of the show. Beloved 2000 Mule skeptic.
Yeah, he's going to be Deputy Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Counterterrorism, because when you are in league with domestic terrorists, being the one in charge of the department that is supposed to be stopping them is great.
That's what you want. Yes, you want to put all of the people in charge of stuff so that they can cover up the fact that they are letting the people that they're in league with get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you can. And also demonstrate that actually all of the departments are corrupt, because here's Sebastian Gorka being corrupt. And therefore, we should dismantle the department entirely.
Well, Gorka couldn't get a security clearance because Trump tried to appoint him to stuff in his first term and he couldn't get a security clearance because of his ties to neo-Nazi groups and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting whether there are actually any background checks being done. Because frankly, what's the point in background checking anyone when the guy with the top job is guilty of 34 felonies? Like, what will disqualify these people? So, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with that. I mean, there are, although very few, there's a couple of surprising choices, which might mean that they actually then don't last as choices. One of whom is the Surgeon General, who's one of the most recent choices, Jeanette Nishwat, who is, I mean, she's been on Fox News. She's a Fox News medical contributor, which is no doubt why Trump has picked her. Because apparently mostly how he did his choosing was mostly just in front of a kind of bay of TV screens. And whenever he was like, oh, maybe this person, then they would show him their kind of showreel of times they've appeared on TV. And that's what he would base his decision on whether they were a good person or not. Because obviously you've got to be good on TV, haven't you, if you can in the Trump administration. So, and yet still picks people like Stephen Miller. But she is an odd pick because she advocated strongly for mask mandates and the vaccine and all of that kind of stuff. So chunks of Trump's base are saying, why have you picked her? She's a terrible pick. Why didn't you pick someone like Joseph Lodapo from Florida, the Surgeon General there, who was, you know, saying all the right things about ivermectin and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a weird choice. So maybe she won't last. But I think fundamentally, it's going to be time pretty soon for a new Deadpool. Fire Swamp, which was the best name that someone came up with for it. I think it's probably worth waiting until he's actually in office and these people get appointed.
But they might not even last
Well, some of them won't last until then, definitely.
Yeah.
But once they've been appointed, we will have a fire swamp where you will get to to choose which ones you think are going to get ejected more quickly than others. And then we get points and stuff like that. And that'd be fun. Because we did that in his first term and there was a high turnover.
Oh, it was great. And I'm hoping that he's learned nothing and will still defy his advisors, you know, the Russell Vaughts, in order to just get rid of people because he doesn't like them anymore.
Oh, absolutely he'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the second anyone says anything against him, he will turn on them. There's no question of that. There's no loyalty coming from his direction.
No.
The one thing I've read that I thought, that's a reasonable point and might give some hope in the face of all of these terrible choices is that clown shoes are better than jack boots.
There you go. Nice.
It's better that he picked people who just don't have a clue what they're doing than people who will dangerously and actively use their positions to harm people. And I'm not saying that none of these people will do that. Some of these people will actively harm people. People will die because of the choices that Trump makes, both in terms of his cabinet picks and other choices he makes as president. Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
It will be awful. But if he picked all fascists, it could be worse. And in many cases, he's just picked idiots who are loyal to him.
Yeah.
So
somebody described it over here as a cavalcade of bozos.
Yeah.
So it's not going to usher in World War III. It's just watching the ringling circus.
I mean, I think it's a little early to say it's not going to usher in World War III.
No, yeah. No, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a result of the appointments, it's not a foregone conclusion, but you know, it might happen by accident.
Mm.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
One of the things Trump's not great at is presidential transitions. In 2016, he didn't actually bother to put a transition team together due to the fact that he, like everyone else, was pretty sure he had no chance of winning. And in 2020, when it came time to give it back, there was that whole insurrection thing. This time, he did have a team in place, but none of them are actually able to get started with briefings or gathering the information they'll need to get to work or even get security clearances because they still haven't signed the legal agreements required by the Presidential Transition Act. The forms are usually signed by all major party candidates over a month before the election in order to facilitate a smooth transition, and once signed, they allow the team to access various resources, including office space and equipment, IT and staff assistance, as well as critical information that will help them to be ready to govern from day one. The Trump team in 2016, such as it was, even signed the documents. So, what's the hold-up this time? One possibility is that in 2020, Trump himself signed into law an amendment to the process which required incoming administrations to sign an ethics pledge to avoid conflicts of interest. By not signing this by the October 1st deadline, he's technically already broken the law. So if you're wondering how long it would take the new Trump administration to start committing crimes once they're in office, the answer is negative 3.5 months.
Texas, not having voted Democratic in a presidential election since Southerner Jimmy Carter won it in 1976, of course voted for Trump this year. Texas is also booming. Texas cities regularly appear on lists of the country's fastest growing communities, and construction cranes and workers donning safety vests are common sights in most major cities. That Texas relies on undocumented labour is one of the state's open secrets. That Trump is going to bring in the mass deportation of undocumented migrants is one of the openly stated policies of the incoming administration. In a very Brexity-feel complaint, Stan Marrick, CEO of Marrick, a Houston-based commercial and residential construction giant, said mass deportations would devastate our industry. We wouldn't finish our highways, we wouldn't finish our schools, housing would disappear. I think they'd lose half their labour. Yeah, you know, that, hey, it's just old Donnie doing that locker room banter. He's just saying those things that we wish we could all say. You know, the Nazi racist mass deportation, Hitler blood cleansing things. He's just letting off steam. He doesn't mean it. Blind eye you've been turning whilst putting your fingers in your ears, holding your nose and voting all at the same time. Yeah, he fucking means it. Brexit's doing away with the freedom of movement in Europe will keep the brown people out, is how it got sold to racists over here. No, what it means was now you can't retire to your Costa del Sol apartment you spent all that time working to afford in Spain, you racist. Because, yeah, they meant it. Once again, the rich, powerful, tax and prosecution-avoiding people in charge that want you not to notice how they're fashioning the entire country to suit just themselves have successfully distracted you by getting you to blame people poorer than you for the things that they're doing to you to keep you poor. Ray Perryman, the president and CEO of Waco-based Perryman Group, said the reason Texans need so many immigrant labourers is simple. The Texas workforce isn't large enough to keep pace with its growth. There are more undocumented people working in Texas right now than there are unemployed people in Texas. So yeah, Brexit meant people who are in sore need of a booming economy voted to impose economic sanctions on themselves. Welcome to the party, Texas. Welcome to the party.
While the election, I think we can all agree, didn't go great, there were a few glimmers of good stuff, like the election of Sarah McBride, the first trans member of Congress in Delaware. But in case you forgot, we're not allowed nice things because Republicans also exist. So Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina introduced legislation last week to change House rules to ban trans women from using women's bathrooms on Capitol Hill. When asked by reporters if she was specifically targeting McBride, Mace said, "Yes, and absolutely, and then some. I'm absolutely 100% going to stand in the way of any man who wants to be in a woman's restroom, in our locker rooms, in our changing rooms. I will be there fighting you every step of the way." Marjorie Taylor Greene also had an opinion, and I bet you can't guess which way she went. Oh, yeah, you totally can. She said Mace's legislation doesn't go far enough, and she said she'd be willing to get into a physical altercation if McBride uses the women's restrooms. House Speaker Mike Johnson initially suggested the issue needed careful consideration, calling it an unprecedented matter, except it isn't, because there are already plenty of trans staffers on Capitol Hill who, until now, were able to use bathrooms they were comfortable with. I say until now because after the briefest pretense that it was a hard decision, Johnson made a ruling that all single-sex facilities in the Capitol and House office buildings, like restrooms, changing rooms and locker rooms, are reserved only for individuals of that biological sex. Meanwhile, Sarah McBride herself showed them how it's done, dismissing their bullshit as an effort to distract from the real issues facing the country and vowing to focus on working hard for her constituents instead.
Nice. In his continued determination to bring about an autocracy with him as the president for life, no, not Putin, but certainly by the Putin playbook, Trump is, of course, determined to convince Americans that all of the offices of state, apart from his, are corrupt. Left-wing extremists that are willing to overlook heinous crimes in order to go after him. And he can't have that because he's the saviour, the God King Messiah. How is he going to do away with elections, constitutional rights, and install himself and his family as rightful dynastic rulers of the new kingdom if he allows objectively neutral legal entities to continue to hold him to account and thus provide checks and balances? For too long, the partisan Department of Justice has been weaponized against me and other Republicans, Trump said in his statement announcing his new pick for Attorney General Pam Bondi. So, first to go will be the attorneys who work with Special Counsel Jack Smith, investigating the former president for his alleged mishandling of classified documents and for his connection with the Capitol riot. President Trump campaigned on firing rogue bureaucrats who have engaged in the illegal weaponization of our American justice system, and the American people can expect he will deliver on that promise, Trump Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt told the Washington Post. Of course, Trump Cellini is the one who defines rogue. And all this despite that Jack Smith is set to reveal in court filings on December 2nd how he plans to wind down the cases against Trump, in adherence with department policy not to prosecute sitting presidents. Because for the poor, maltreated little kid, little gingerhead kid, that never could and won't now ever be able to win the love and approval of his emotionally stunted, long-dead father, it's not enough for Trump just to win. Every other fucker has to lose, and lose bigly. But don't worry about him running for office again in 4 years' time. He'd have made sure he never loses again by doing away with voting. Heads he wins, tail we lose, and our heads we'll lose too.
Some bills are given awkward clunky names so that they make a fun acronym, and others are designed to hide the real nefarious intention of the bill behind a name that sounds so positive you'd have to be crazy to vote against it. Such is the case for the Stop Terror Financing and Tax Penalties on American Hostages Act. Why would Democrats vote against the Stop Terror Financing Act? Surely the only reason is because they're pro-terrorist. And yet, last week, 144 House Democrats and one Republican voted against it. The reason is that the bill empowers the Secretary of the Treasury to designate any non-profit organisation as a terrorist-supporting organisation and revoke their tax-exempt status, in many cases effectively shutting them down. Even at face value, it seems very likely this will be used to target any pro-Palestinian organisations. But when Trump takes office, it would also enable him and his no doubt compliant Treasury Secretary to attack any non-profit he disagrees with no real oversight or guardrails. As we know from 2000 Mules, a notionally left-wing organisation can simply mean one that tries to help disadvantaged or marginalised people with empathy and understanding, and that's apparently enough to be suspected of cheating in an election on behalf of Democrats. So if this bill were to pass, then any non-profit which tries to mitigate the cruelest effects of Trump's attacks on immigrants, women, the LGBTQ plus community or anyone else could find themselves in danger.
I never thought I'd say this, but I find myself in agreement with Kemi Badenoch. What? I know, right? She had said in a select committee in 2023 when she was Women's and Equalities Commissioner that the content of the curriculum being taught to children should be created by those that are experts in the subject. She was talking about health and social education, and her party had been instrumental in cutting the funding for that ever since Labour had introduced it in the early 2000s, but that's beside the point. Kemi might, just might, balk at the heavy-handed implementation by the Texas School Board of a new state-written curriculum infused with Bible stories after it voted in favour of the material on Friday. Rachel Laser, CEO of the advocacy group Americans United for Separation of Church and State, points out that under the actual very First Amendment, that this may actually be unconstitutional, suggesting the teachings violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, which states Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. A slim majority of the school board's 15 members, 8-7, voted to keep the bluebonnet learning material for use next educational year. Under the curriculum, a kindergarten lesson about the golden rule would prompt instructors to teach students about Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Another kindergarten unit about art appreciation would primarily focus on the Bible's Book of Genesis and artworks inspired by it. First grade unit on sharing stories would teach the parable of the prodigal son. The third grade unit on ancient Rome would feature a section dedicated to the life of Jesus and Christianity in the Roman Empire. And a poetry unit for fifth graders would include a psalm from the Old Testament taught alongside poems from Robert Frost and William Carlos Williams. No other texts from religious books would be included in the unit. The Texas Education Agency says the lessons were developed using the best evidence from cognitive science to ensure teachers have access to quality on-grade level materials that enable teachers to focus on delivering the highest quality instruction and provide differentiated supports to students. Stacey Childs, a member of the board who voted against Bluebonnet, disagreed somewhat, adding, "I represent the most diverse place in Texas. I represent Muslims, people of the Sikh faith, right? People that don't even have a faith, that are agnostic. These people should see themselves reflected in the material just as much as Christian." Still, after all the mass deportations, once Texas is emptied of everyone but approving white-thinking, right-thinking, Stepford midwitch cuckoo handmade worshippers of the orange one, no one will notice that there's no diversity, nor that the words to all the hymns have been changed to include the word Don instead of God.
In September, investigative journalism organisation ProPublica reported on the deaths of Amber Thurman and Candy Miller in Georgia. Or more accurately, they reported on the findings of the Georgia Maternal Mortality Review Committee, who found that in both cases, the women's deaths were preventable and were caused by the state's abortion ban, which led to restricted access to care they desperately needed. The committee, made up of 32 members from a variety of healthcare-related backgrounds, found that Candy Miller had ordered abortion pills from overseas, but when the abortion didn't fully complete, refused to visit the doctor due to the brand new abortion ban. They found that Amber Thurman died of sepsis after the hospital delayed the DNC she needed for 20 hours while they debated whether it fitted into one of the few exceptions in the law that wouldn't lead to criminal penalties for the medical team. Once these tragic events were made public, the Georgia authorities realised something must be done and sprang into action, immediately dismissing the entire review committee and announcing that a new committee will be recruited. Presumably, they'll be far more careful this time and only recruit doctors who will either ignore the true cause of death of pregnant people or at least conceal it from the public.
This last week saw millionaire farm owners who aren't farmers but dress like them, who bought their farms as a way to dodge inheritance tax, people like pseudo-MP and Trump licker Nigel Farage, and manufacturers of hot air like James Dyson and Jeremy Clarkson, co-opt a real protest by farmers about issues impacting them. Issues that have occurred since Brexit put paid to the farming subsidies that the EU used to give them to offset their costs and help them through bad harvests. And issues like people buying up agricultural land to offset their inheritance tax liabilities, putting up the prices of actual farmland being sought by actual farmers to do actual farming. The co-option of that protest by tax-avoiding non-farmers was to make it look like the Labour Party's budget commitment to increase the inheritance tax level for agricultural land from April 2026 would affect ordinary farmers and thus distract attention, as per, away from rich bastards who are causing the actual problem. The rise in the inheritance tax threshold on farmland means that any agricultural property valued above the threshold of £1 million will no longer be fully exempt from inheritance tax, meaning they will face an effective inheritance tax of 20% on the value of their assets over £1 million. Everyone else, incidentally, pays 40% on anything above £325,000. Many actual farmers would remain completely unaffected by the tax rise. A lot of the non-farmers would consequently have to pay some inheritance tax rather than none at all. The Tories, keen to show that this is a non-political issue but one that affects normal people, turned up en masse on the back of a trailer. And whilst none of them are farmers or have any connection to farming, Priti Patel wore a coat obviously edged with the pelt of a subject from her own private mink farm. Thankfully, the fact that Cruella de Braverman is no longer in the cabinet meant 100 or so Dalmatians could live to breathe another day. Thankfully, also this week, former UKIP councillor Colette Fairbanks lost her claim that she was bullied and harassed by her charity employer because she supported the UK's departure from the EU in a tribunal ruling that determined that pro-Brexit views are not protected from workplace discrimination. And this also meant that cosplay landowner pound shop Parker from Thunderbirds Nigel Farage could undiscriminatorily be excluded from the lists of speakers at the farmers' protest because of his association with Brexit. Though, of course, he'll take to all the airway, print and social media to tell us how he's so cancelled we can't hear his voice anymore. Oh, if only that was true.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used the fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our strawman level patrons Mike Smith, LT, Colleen Laiella, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Aussie on Bank, Laura Tomsic, Mark Reiki and Amber R. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED we can just call her Amber. And this year at QED I met the listener who recognised her at QED last year because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patron Schmutz, Sharon Robinson, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron Kaz Tui. Thank you so much for your continued support. It's really, really very much appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fallaciouStrump or in the Discord at fallaciouStrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.